I'm Beth Farah, and I'm a graduate in journalism, and I'm currently working towards my master's in journalism and multimedia communications. This series is going to be discussing topics that journalism students and graduates are sometimes too scared to ask about. So, if you're like me and you're not too sure exactly what it is you want to do, or if you're getting confused about all the career options getting thrown at you in these last few months of your degree, keep listening. This episode, we're going to be talking about freelancing. That word gets thrown around a lot in journalism, and I think a lot of journalists and lecturers expect everyone to know what it is, and that everyone has some sort of instinct to how to become a freelancer. So I've drafted in some help in the form of Eamon Jacobs, who is currently in the scary world of freelancing. So, hi Eamon.
Hi.
Introduce yourself.
My name is Eamon Jacobs. I'm a freelance entertainment journalist. I graduated from Solent last year, 2017. I currently write for Comic Book Resources. I've previously written for The Geeky Monkey, Screen Rant, and Heroic Hollywood.
You're putting everyone else to shame.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Everyone else is like, oh no. This is probably going to be one of the more informal podcasts of the series. Just so you know.
I also run a podcast on a website that I started.
Do you want to give yourself some free advertising?
Yeah, yeah. Heroes Direct. Listen to Countdown to Infinity. We're 30 episodes in.
So, why did you choose journalism as a degree?
So it actually started when I was in school. Basically, I'd come out of the cinema and just not shut up about whatever film I'd just seen.
As per usual.
And my mum and dad got just a bit bored of hearing me rant on about whatever we'd just watched. And was just like, just start a blog. It'll be good for your career and it'll shut you up for a bit. Just go do that, basically. There was a bit more love than that, but it was the core.
Basically, please shut up.
Yeah.
Here's a blog. I think that's basically how any journalist gets started.
Pretty much.
Please shut up. Here's a blog.
It was terrible. It was Blogger.
I remember Blogger.
Yeah, I had no idea how to use it. I got my friend to make me a really, really terrible logo. It was so basic.
Aww.
But it was fine.
Yeah.
It did the job.
Everyone's got to start somewhere.
It did get me into uni, to be fair.
My blogger got me into uni as well.
Yeah, I had a bank of reviews that I'd written. I think I wrote something like 50 over the few years that I was doing it.
I wrote about five before I started uni.
I started it in like 2009. I think it might even still be up somewhere.
See, I've worked uni open days, right? And
yeah,
all these like prospective students that are like nervous and worried about getting into university are telling me this bank full of like work experience they've done. And I was like, wow, you've done more than me now.
I did 2 weeks at the local paper.
I did one day there.
Yeah, it was interesting. No, actually, that's a lie. I did 1 week. I didn't do two.
You were going to say, no, that's a lie. It's not interesting.
Well, there's that as well.
It's a good place to start.
Good place to start.
Yeah. So, you did your blogger. You got into university.
Yeah, I did.
Baby Eamon is a fresher.
Oh, God.
What happened with fresher Eamon?
So I kind of floundered a bit to begin with at uni. I wasn't quite sure what I was doing. I was in a class. There was majority girls, and that's fine. But their interests were very, very different to mine. Luckily, my lecturers were pretty great and like encouraged me to pursue what I wanted to write about, and that kind of flowed through into my assessments. So to begin with, I was creating like double page spreads of like reviews and news pieces, and then when it was a little bit more imaginative, I was creating my own stories, and that was like my first year and a half. And then the back half of second year, it was just like, okay, well, third year's coming up and you're going to have to do something pretty big to make a good grade. And then that got very stressful. You know, lots of group work, creating magazines. And then in final year, I took the website that I'd been working on for a couple of years with one of my friends from back home, and I took it into the print format. I created it using InDesign and Photoshop. And it was the most stressful 6 months of my life.
With Eamon last year. It was the most stressful 6 months of his life.
Yeah, it was great. As you can probably tell, I am a writer, not a designer. And I did all the design work myself and wanted to hurl my Mac across the kitchen on several occasions. luckily, you know, it all turned out quite well. I got a decent grade. I came out of university with a 2.1, which I was quite happy with.
So what year of uni did you start freelancing?
So in the back end of 2016, I started writing for a website, and it was very basic freelancing. It was not very well paid at all. It was a good experience, but because of that, I was able to sort of extend contacts, American contacts, which was quite useful for future jobs. And from there, I started to get more print work with The Geeky Monkey, which unfortunately now has closed. Massive shame, because it was a great magazine. So it actually came about because I reached out to the editor of The Geeky Monkey to do a critical analysis on the publication, its readership, the type of articles it was doing, how much they pay for freelance work, etc., etc. And he replied back with, oh, send me some links of your work. I'd be happy to feature it in the publication. So, you know, sent him a couple of pieces. And then afterwards, he was like, oh, well, we're going to consider this your trial period as such. And after this, we'd quite happily pay you to keep contributing.
And so I was like, stumbled upon freelance.
I stumbled upon that freelance job. Wow. It was great because within one issue, I was then the cover story writer for the next three issues.
So annoying.
Not to brag, it was great. I got to write 3,000 words about Game of Thrones and then 3,000 words about the Goonies. It was great. I wasn't complaining.
See, my experience of freelance is like completely opposite. I was talking to like a lecturer and he was like, you need to decide at what point you need to stop working for free.
Yeah.
Because as journalism students, you have to work for free, don't you?
That's how I started, yeah.
Yeah. And I kind of put my foot down when I graduated. I was like, I have a degree now. I'm not working for free for people anymore. And I found that they don't like that.
No,
people
they're not keen.
People do not like paying journalist graduates.
It's great for your exposure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that word gets thrown about a lot.
It's not great for making ends meet, though.
No, exposure doesn't pay my bill.
No. Like, one publication was like, we can't afford to pay you, but it's great experience. And I was like, I've done 3 years of experience. There comes a point where experience isn't needed anymore.
Yeah, I don't need anymore. It's a job now.
Yeah.
It's a bit daft. It annoys me.
I wish I'd kind of like said to myself, like put that mark of where I was going to stop working for free a bit earlier on in my degree.
Yeah.
Like third year, possibly look for paid work. Because once you graduate, you need it. You need to get paid.
Yeah, yeah, to say the least.
Yeah.
You know, student loans and debt and just normal living, everyday costs, I suppose.
Yeah.
But yeah, I kind of stumbled into that one. And then after I graduated, I panicked, understandably.
Everyone does about getting a job.
And to begin with, no physical jobs were coming through. And I just happened to apply for one. Screen Rant, thinking it was a physical role, and they replied back saying, "Oh, it's a remote job. You contribute minimum 10 articles a week." And then I just inquired about writing for their sister site, Comic Book Resources, because I still had a lot of spare time, believe it or not, and just kind of really got into on a roll with that. Not only doing listicles. But features as well.
Is that what they're called, listicles?
Listicles, yeah. Listicle articles.
That's a new word.
Have you not heard listicles before?
No.
Yeah, well, there you go. You learn something new every day.
Every day's a school day.
Yeah. So yeah, I do listicles and features. And then I just mainly moved over to CBR because it was more in line with my interests. Because I'm a huge nerd.
You are a bit.
I'm a little bit.
Yeah.
It's fine. I wear it like a badge.
Is that kind of like, that was one of my questions. Is it better to have like a niche in freelancing or is it better to kind of say that you can do anything?
I would say, I'm going to take the easy route and say a combination of both.
Yeah.
Because having a niche, you know, you can show that you've got that specialist knowledge.
Yeah.
Which means you're, you know, not automatically equipped to write about the subject, but it certainly helps.
Yeah, I kind of find that if you don't have a niche, then what's the point of them hiring for freelance? Like, if they've got someone in-house that can do that job, why should they pay you to...
Yeah, exactly. What are you bringing to the table? And for Comic Book Resources, that was very much part of my sell, if that's what we're talking about. I've said comic books and film and television has been my interest since being a little kid. You know, I've been brought up on this. I know my stuff.
You like eat, sleep, breathe.
That's not
comic
the point.
Books.
That's not the point.
Well, it is the point.
It is the point.
You enjoy what you write about.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot to be said for enjoying what you write about. But having said that, it's also been quite negative when actually applying for real world physical roles, because if you've only got the one topic that you've written about, what I've found is many employers look down on that, very much so in an interview as well. You can see as soon as if your CV is compiled mainly of one topic, there'll just be a little like look of disappointment almost on the face. So I think having quite a broad spectrum of writing and topics is very, very helpful.
I think you can't really win in this scenario as a journalism graduate.
No, I think a lot of it does come down to luck. Right place, right time, or right application, right time, or, you know, stumbling into freelance work as I did. Don't get me wrong, I'm not complaining about stumbling into freelance work. That's
our
fine.
My advice to you is just dumb luck.
Just dumb luck. But, you know, I think you have to put yourself out there. You have to have a great social media presence to begin with, because even though I think we've kind of all gotten out of this, I can't post anything to Facebook anymore. Yeah. But still, things like Twitter and Instagram, I think people do still monitor a little bit more closely. But, you know, maintaining that social media presence, you know, does help when employers are kind of doing a semi-background check on people.
See, social media is an odd one as a journalist because you need it.
Yeah.
But then again, you can't show yourself on social media because then they're not going to hire you for a job. You kind of have to get the balance of how you use Twitter. I wouldn't say Facebook because I would never use Facebook professionally.
Neither would I.
I had a lecturer tell me that he uses Facebook professionally. I should be doing the same. I was like, no.
No. I mean, you know, some people have Facebook pages.
Yeah.
I've got a Facebook page for the website that I run, but that's different. That's not me. Do you know what I mean?
I think you can have a Facebook personal page when you're really professional and you've got quite a following, but I wouldn't set one up to advertise my... Like, you have LinkedIn for that.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's face it, if you set up a page just like now, it's going to be your friends and family that like it, and, you know, usually if you're proud of your writing, you'll share it on your personal page anyway, so there's no point for another...
I have a professional and a personal Twitter, though.
I thought about that, but I kind of already had a decent amount of followers on my normal Twitter, so I just run it kind of semi-professional.
My personal Twitter, I rant too much about my life, really, but how people annoy me. I keep getting told by people that you need to put a bit of personal on your professional Twitter, and I'm like...
Yeah, but how much is...
How much? Where do you draw the line of... Like, you need to be chatting, you need to show your personality. I was like, but where do we draw the line of my personality?
So I think, you know, if you're trying to censor things a little bit on a professional Twitter account, and you're trying to be chatty at the same time, like, obviously your interests align with your chatty personality, so it's very difficult to find a balance between the two. That's why, personally, I think having just a one account where you do have a balance rather than trying to separate them too much... Because then it kind of gives you a little bit more freedom.
I think I set up both two different accounts because my personal Twitter is just so old and it goes back from, like, beginning of college.
Oh, yeah, same.
So I thought I'd start new, try and build some followers up.
How's that going?
It's not going great, if I'm honest. It's difficult.
It is difficult,
like, I remember going through building my followers in first year of university on Twitter, and I did it all, and I can't remember how to do it again.
The way that I do it is a little bit stalkerish.
You just follow loads of people.
No, I look at the professional people I have on Twitter, and I go through their followers, and if they're somebody that has, like, say, 200 followers, and then, following 200 people and has, like, 1,000 followers, the chances of them following you back are, like, next to none.
That's
you wanna follow people that have a similar sort of follower and following count, because that usually means they're going to follow you back. I'm not saying to do this for everybody. I just mean people that, you know, are relevant.
Yeah.
So that's how I've got on a few sort of freelance gigs, is doing that. Specifically one at Sci-Fi Wire, I did the same with an editor. So it kind of, it helps. It's a little bit stalkery because you are, you know, trawling through other people's followers.
It's a skill, isn't it, building a social media
presence? It's difficult.
And I think a lot of, like, when you're in university, you're expected to just build your social media presence, and no one's ever tells you what's the best way to go about that, because it's not an exact equation, is it?
I mean, you could just buy followers, but who wants to do that?
Who's got the money for that?
It's what expensive.
What student has the money to buy followers?
Yeah, true.
Is freelancing slightly unstable?
Yes.
Yeah.
Completely.
That's what worries me about freelancing. I think it worries a lot of people.
I think you need to have like a couple or several freelancing gigs simultaneously. A, to fill up your time, otherwise you're just going to be twiddling your thumbs and probably realistically spending more money than you should do. If you have several freelance gigs, it takes up a lot of your time, and you're pulling in money from multiple outlets even. And now, obviously, sometimes they're not as well paid as others, so it kind of depends on your rates, but versus like their base rates. So it really does depend on which, you know, where you're writing for. So, for example, one thing to take into account is if you're writing for an American website, they may say, "Cool, we're going to pay you $100." You have to work out that what that's going to be in pounds.
Yeah, and also something that people don't tell you about freelancing, you have to do your own taxes, don't you?
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Yeah, why has no one ever told us that?
No, don't know.
I've talked to a lot of people about freelancing because over the last year I've decided that I'll probably need to do a lot of it if I don't get a full-time job.
Yeah.
And someone's told me how much I should be charging and how much like my time is worth and all that lot. But no one has at one point said, also, you need to do your taxes. Don't forget to do that.
It's terrifying. I didn't know that. I spent a week in this January, like, you know,
panicked, in a
bit of a sweat. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. Nobody's ever told me how to do taxes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Do your research before you just jump into.
Oh yeah.
Because don't overspend, and then it gets to tax season, and.
And then you have a big bill come in, and you're like, oh dear lord.
You can't pay.
Yeah.
You also have a job alongside your freelancing.
I do.
Don't you?
Yeah. So I am the graduate intern. "Quote unquote editorial assistant," which is the one I go with. I don't really tell people I'm an intern.
Yeah, sounds better.
Sounds better. Editorial assistant sounds better.
Yeah.
At Digesis magazine, so that is the unconventional take on film and TV criticism.
You're getting a lot of reps in for the things you do today, aren't you?
Yeah.
Getting a lot of free advertising.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
So I run the social media. I occasionally write for the mini issues, and I help plan and design and, you know, port text into templates. For the print edition.
But it's kind of how you have to do it, don't you? You can't really just do freelancing.
No. Freelancing alongside of a full-time job is definitely a lot better. Sometimes time management is difficult, especially if you have a busy day at work and then you go home and you've got a deadline. It's sometimes a bit like, okay, right, there's me bunch of free time just been swallowed up. But it is worth it because then you can show later on down the line that you've managed essentially two jobs simultaneously, which isn't a bad thing to
more
brag about.
More experience on your CV as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And that nice cover letter you have to write for each job, you can be like, I know how to balance like two jobs at once.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And it does look quite good.
Is there anything you wish you knew this time last year?
How to do taxes.
Yeah, is that the one? That's the key taxes. Thing we're coming out of
honestly.
This, is taxes.
How to do taxes. Time management again. You know, going into a full-time job and managing deadlines is difficult, but once you find the balance, it works perfectly. The way I've found to do it is to do things as early as possible because then you don't have to worry about it later on.
You've been at university for 4 years. You should have already known that.
I did know that. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, sure.
Sort of-ish.
I think it kind of goes in line, but have you got any advice for anyone that's thinking of going into freelance? Other than taxes, you can't say taxes again.
Taxes.
I think we've hammered in the people that you need to do your taxes.
Yeah, I think we got that across. I would say try not to keep yourself too niche and be open to new ideas and writing about new topics. And if you find yourself, you know, being pulled in two directions, try and write for both. Because then you are broadening A, your skill set, B, the topics that you've covered, and it gives you a lot more to talk about in a CV or a cover letter or an interview. So don't be too afraid to try and push in a new direction. And sometimes try and find an area that isn't written about as much and establish yourself as a quote-unquote expert in that field.
Yeah.
Because then you'll have more people coming to you and websites coming to you for work.
So long story short, freelance is scary.
It's scary, but it can be rewarding.
Yeah.
Because, like, let's face it, writing about what you enjoy is quite good.
It's just a bit more of a commitment, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, you get a job, it's got a contract, you know that you're stable, but you
turn up 9 to 5.
You still have to work at freelancing.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's all for this episode. If you've got any questions, reply to this on Twitter. You can tweet Eamon at
Eamon Jacobs. Pretty simple.
Yeah. That's a simple handle.
I was smart and calculated with this one.
I have a very popular name. Beth Farrow is... Everyone has that handle.
Yeah, I bet that was taken straight away, wasn't it?
Yeah. So, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.